I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
Well, there's only one place to start, and that is that Dear McConnelly has retired. So everyone can expect to see him coming on as a sub in the All-Ireland final just before Christmas at halftime, more than likely. How are you today, Conan? I'm sure this has hit you like a lorry.
Like a ton of bricks last night, Willie, when I saw it. I want to thank everybody who reached out and messaged me last night then just to send their condolences. Yeah, it's tough news, but I think we've been expecting it.
Yeah, well, were we expecting it, Connor? I'm not sure. I suppose it's not the shock it would have been 3 years ago because let's be honest, he's been in semi-retirement for the last few years.
Yeah, I suppose that's the way I was looking at it. No more than if there seems to have been a spate of inter-county retirements just before what's going to be the shortest season in inter-county history, which makes me I was wondering about that. But when you look back at it, I'm not that. I was shocked to hear it, but when you look back into it, I'm not that shocked, you know, considering the circumstances. Because let's say you said there, he's been in semi-retirement, and since he pushed that linesman, in 2017, his appearances for Dublin have been sporadic, to say the least. So while I was shocked to immediately hear it last night, when you dig down into it, I'm not that shocked because he hasn't been as influential a part of the panel as he was before 2017.
I think, Conan, a little bit of disappointment for me. And the reason I thought he might have, because of the last few years, I thought he might have given it one last year, you know, a huge effort and played the whole year and finished after saying, right, well, you know, I had my place back. I was back 100%, you know, rather than leaving it on kind of sub roles.
It is a strange one. Connor mentioned the short season there as well. Like, I think with the people retiring now, like, you know, after they've probably gotten back into training, maybe it's become clear that they're not going to have the roles that they'd like. And with somebody like Jamie Connolly, who's been there since, what, 2017 or 2007, and it's a hard one to swallow. He's going to be a sub again. And, like, you're right, because one of his best performances, I think, was when he came on and the 2017 final against Mayo when they needed him to come on at halftime. And, you know, that was like one of his last big sort of roles to play. And it's like, you know, that wasn't that long ago. And it's one of the last times he really did feature. And it's like, maybe he still thinks he has that in him, but maybe he does. He won't give it to him.
Yeah, that's the thing. I suppose, like, I mean, did we ever see the best of him in a Dublin jersey? We saw brilliant performances. Like, he's never been nominated for Player of the Year. He's won two All-Stars. Now, we're talking about maybe the most naturally talented player ever to play the game. Like, I mean, it's difficult to know how you kind of put him down based on performances. Now, I do think that the era he played across, the position he was playing, played in, where there was a lot of work involved, probably did have a you know, an impact on that, Conor. Like, I mean, this is a fella who can hit 210 in an All-Ireland club final, playing wing forward, doing an awful lot of work. You know what I mean? We'd never saw him racking up high scores from that wing forward position, which I don't think was his best position.
Yeah, I mean, did we see the best of him? I would like to think so, but it was probably too sporadic. Do you know, that might be what you were getting at in terms of, like, so I suppose with a talent like Connolly is that, like, you know, he delivered some unbelievable moments, and he did have some seasons where he was fantastic when he did win the two All-Stars. But what he didn't have in comparison to, say, a lot of the Dublin players that he would have played with was maybe a consistent level of that performance over maybe 4 to 5 seasons. There was various reasons for that, and we've got into them in the last 3 years in particular. As for the era, yeah, I mean, first of all, he came up against, when you're talking about the early 2000s or the early 2010s, for example, he came up against teams like Donegal that would have prevented him from delivering that type of performance, you know, where he might have got, you know, 1-7, 1-8 or 2-10, as you said, at club level. And then not only that, he came up against, you know, possibly in Lee Keegan, the best man marker, you know, playing at the peak of his powers, and marked him in some of the most, from the biggest games between Mayo and Dublin at the All-Ireland series in the last few years too. So there was mitigating circumstances, yeah. But in amongst all that, you're still talking, I mentioned early 2010s there. I still think his best performance was probably Dublin against Tyrone in 2011. Yeah. And my other one on top of that would be against Kerry in 2013, where I scored 4 points, I think, from wing forward, one man of the match, and effectively retired Tomás O'Shea in the process. So, yeah, probably, did we see the best of him? I think in moments, yes, but probably not as consistent as somebody deserving, you know, somebody with the talent of Jim McConnell.
I think, yeah, when you think of his best performances, definitely Tyrone 11, he got 6 from play. The All-Ireland final in 2011 was his best All-Ireland final, I think. 2013 versus Kerry, 16 versus Kerry. Like, it's interesting that these two best performances against Kerry those 2 years were against a team, you know, that played more of a traditional style where he could get more ball close to goal and show what he can do, Conan, from a scoring perspective. Interesting that the 2015 final was against Kerry and he didn't play great in that. I'm just expecting somebody who's, you know, held up in that regard as the greatest potentially of his generation, probably never really took an All-Ireland by the scruff of the neck.
I know, right? But I think there's a problem with how we're regarding it, because, like, yeah, like, we didn't see him score 2-5 and win All-Ireland himself. And, like, we know that he probably could have played off the full forward or played centre forward and been...
And held it, yeah.
Yeah, you know, but what we did see was him playing in the middle, like, you know, putting in hits and winning kickouts, calming people, lifting sieges and starting those transitions and doing all those things in attacks that we're seeing in all the clips that's going on social media today. Like, you know, we could have saw him playing further forward, as you say, take it by the scruff of the neck. But there's a problem if that's the only way that we can think of somebody being class and seeing the best of them. I think we saw the best of Jeremy Connolly as a modern day wing forward, and he was brilliant at it.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I mean, the pass to Kilkenny last year in the All-Ireland final, like, that was meant for Con, number one. But, like, I mean, some of his passes could have been a little bit kind of over exaggerated. Like, that was a brilliant pass, but it was not meant for Kilkenny there. Con made the run out, and it actually.
But that was a 10 out of 10 pass for Con.
Oh, it would have been, yeah. No, I'm not wrong. But look, the pass to Con wouldn't have been as spectacular as the pass to Kilkenny, who kind of came out of nowhere and caught it.
Yeah, no, that's fair, because it looked like an over-the-top pass to Kilkenny.
Yeah, yeah.
But that was the beauty of his passes, though. Even that one to Con, like, they always had just an extra 10 metres. The depth of them were just something that all their players didn't have, and he just always backed himself to do it.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I think talent-wise, I don't think anybody... Like, I tweeted out a clip of his YouTube best moments there, and Jesus Christ, Connor. Like, I mean, it's just breathtaking what he could do. And it's breathtaking how easy and relaxed he was when he was doing it. He just made these incredible scores look like this is handy.
Yeah, and it was the first example, Willie, of like no more than many people I've watched about X amount of football YouTube highlight videos with crappy music on top of them. And like I saw you put that out, and it was like it had the worst soundtrack in the background, like all these YouTube videos do. But like that's not to take away from, like, it was just... It just came with, like, everything to hit, like, the stuff that seems nearly impossible for a lot of people, or just so difficult for a lot of people, came so naturally to him. And it's just like some of the best examples of that, I think, were the nonchalance with the way he used to, like, knock over points on his left foot on the run. The one that stands out to me was the one in the 2016 going into injury time against Kerry in 2016. Yeah. They put Dublin a point up or put them 2 points up. And then we're talking about some of the passes as well. Some of the points with the outside of the boot from just, you know, from like 50 yards. It made it look so easy. Like he's like, that's the thing about it. Like you talk there about, you know, the difficulty with holding Connolly up. Like he didn't grab All-Ireland Finals and stuff by the scruff of the neck. Whereas I would say that there are players in that Dublin team that did. I'm thinking of Kieran Kilkenny, for example, James McCarthy in the 2017 final. So there are players that he played with that did grab All-Ireland Finals by the scruff of the neck. But in terms of when I remember Dermot Connolly, I'm thinking about easily the most naturally talented and gifted player to have played since he started, maybe like in the mid-2000s. And like that's, like he's not going to have the personal accolades. I think he only won 2 All-Stars. You know, and he's got plenty of All-Irelands and stuff like that. But like the legacy of that, like it coming from Mayo, like people still talk about Kieran McDonald to this day because of the individual moments that he delivered. And people are going to remember Dermot Connolly like that for a long time to come.
Yeah, I think that. And I wouldn't count the All-Stars too much. That's, you know, the likes of Martin Breheny, and who probably can't get an interview off him. And it's easier to leave Connolly out. He should have had more All-Stars. But not being nominated for Player of the Year, not winning Player of the Year, you still think that these greatest of all time would win Player of the Year or been in the mix, no matter how, you know, little media they do. Like, there's no doubt he is more of a darling of Hill 16, Conan, than probably any other Dublin player, maybe outside of Jason Sherlock when he was playing in 95. Like, the Hill loves Dermot Connolly. And I think that there's no doubt that kind of was amplified in 2017 when he pushed the linesman. Everyone in Dublin thought he was hard done by. He took his medicine, he said nothing, he came back. The Hill absolutely loved him since then, and funnily enough, that's the Hill loved him more the less they saw of him.
Yeah, well, and like it's definitely the case, because you know when other counties then started like not ganging up, but they started having a disliking to him even before 2017, because he might have been involved in scuffles and fights and what have you. So when that's happening, when there's a player who's divisive or maybe not loved as much beyond that county, then that county tend to rally behind him even more. Like, you know, when they were, like, remember Jim Gavin's famous press conference as well, coming out and just like backing him to the hilt, and that's what the Hill did. And like, but he sort of became like a prototype as well of the kind of player that Dublin started churning out. Like, you know, with his skill level off both feet and his catching and his work rate and like his physical.
The size of him, yeah.
Yeah, like he just sort of was the ideal player then, what everybody in Dublin has to start looking at.
That's it. I think no matter what way you look at it, Connor, it's players that aren't perfect. It's players that can get sent off. It's players that show they're human rather than, you know, the more robot players going, how does he do it? You might respect those players, but you don't love them. Like, if you ask anyone in Argentina who they prefer, Maradona or Messi, they'll say Maradona. You know, and it's not because he won a World Cup. It's because he's one of them, right? Whereas Messi's just this freak of nature that they maybe might not be able to relate to as much. You know, people who play club football get in trouble. You know, people, you know, aren't perfect. Dermot Connolly wasn't perfect. That's, as far as I can see, is why the Hill absolutely loved him.
Yeah, they love a bit of frailty. Like, there's somebody they can relate to, and they definitely had that in Connolly. And they loved like that when they had that with pushing the ref, and even the year before when he got sent off after that, the battle with Lee Keegan, and I think that led to the Things Lee Did hashtag and all that sort of stuff. So Dublin fans had a cause to get behind, and their cause was Dermot in that instance. And I think, and you've kind of hinted at that, I think that there was nearly desperation would be putting it too much, but in the last few years, because we saw so little of him, I think there was a kind of a rush to hype up some of the stuff that he did do a little more than maybe they deserved, because people were so keen to see Dermot come back and be the type of player he was. And like, I know that pass, say in last year's final, it was an unbelievable pass, but there was a few moments like that where people were like, oh, Dermot is back, and they just wanted their Dermot back again, and it didn't quite happen, unfortunately. But you're right, it's the Maradona one is a good analogy, because it's just, it's not saying the players he played with are messy or machines, but like there's a more human side to Dermot, and fans will always relate that.
That's the thing. And just to talk about that Kilkenny pass in the All-Ireland final, Kieran Kilkenny technically made a very, very bad run there. Like, Con O'Callaghan, if he hadn't caught that, would be saying, where are you going? That's my space. I'm running out for that. Kilkenny was just on fire that day, and he must have wanted every ball, because the right run for Kilkenny to make was either to run towards Dermot to leave space behind for Con, even if he didn't get it, and maybe double back around looking for the hand pass off Conn. He completely hogged Conn's ball. But look, Kilkenny was on fire, Conn, on that day, so I'm not going to be overly critical. But that was not a run you want to teach young wing forwards.
No, and it's like, if it was anybody else other than Kilkenny, you would be roaring and shouting him out of it. Like, get the hell out of my way. Like, that's something that a clumsy wing forward would be doing. Getting him
I've often been ate when you're starting to get a bit too greedy. I've often been ate by the full forward line. Will you get out of my way? I'm running out into there.
Yeah, that's why I'm conditioned now just to stay in the back line as a half forward. Let those boys play. The best thing about that move was the turnover, though, as well. And that probably...
Yeah, massive. And that was a massive turnover when you think about it, because there was a point in it, and Kerry had just turned over Cluxton's kick out, which obviously is massive in any game. And instead of Kerry being on the front foot and getting a point to get a draw match, Connolly turns him over, gives a bullet of a pass, meant for Conn. Kilkenny made a terrible run. Jeez, it was just Dublin's day when you think about it. We're getting back into analysing the All-Ireland final last year now. But that was it. That was a massive turning point in the game. And that was down to Connolly. And I think I remember saying at the time, even though I was in Australia, Connolly was brilliant in that final when he came on. And he should have been taken off in that final when he came on. So he had a real mixed bag that day. Shout out to Adrian Marin, who retired as well. Way to go, Adrian. You timed that perfectly, right? So Adrian would have got a much bigger percentage of the show today. A player I really like, some man to kick a pint. He's retired as well. Deserves a shout out for being an excellent player. I remember meeting him on the street in Sligo one night, and we both recognised each other, and we had a bit of crack. He brought me to a nightclub in Sligo town and brought me straight up to the VIP. There was nobody in the nightclub at that time, so I don't know why we needed necessarily to go to a VIP in Sligo, but listen, we were laughing about it. So shout out to him. Connor, I'm sure you've seen plenty of Adrian Marin. I won't throw that to Conan. He's our Dublin correspondent.
Was it Envy, Woolly? Was it Envy, the nightclub that night, was it?
I can't remember the name of it, but we went up the stairs and this place was cordoned off as a VIP section of this local. We don't have that in Portlaoise, so it was a bit of a novelty.
I think it's changed name a couple of times, but if you were in the VIP section in Envy in Sligo back in the day, you were the big deal. So I remember one particular game, Woolly. He had a couple of good games against Mayo, but the one game I remember, it was early 2010s again, and he played against Galway in Pier Stadium in Tuam, and he was playing full forward, and he absolutely destroyed Galway. Brilliant off both feet, really quick. But the thing about Adrian Marin is just playing for Sligo, he didn't get the exposure at national level that he probably deserved, but he was absolutely brilliant. And yeah, what time? I don't know, did he know that Dermot was going to announce his retirement and said he'd slip on under the radar? But maybe as somebody who brought you to the VIP section, he was just caught off guard. So yeah, but best luck to him in retirement. He had a great career.
Exactly. Davy Fitz has been in the media this week, lads. He has been making a lot of sense. You know, he's talking about spending and spending caps. And because this is so logical and makes sense, we know for a fact the GAA won't introduce it because they're, you know, without going bashing them, common sense doesn't often come in and fairness doesn't often come into their thinking. So Davy Fitzgerald says some counties at our level, that's incredible. Some other counties, I don't know our budget, but I think it's pretty okay. Everyone should be on the same budget. It should be around the same. I have a big backroom team, but I can tell you an awful lot of them are doing for nothing. They get very little out of it. They're doing it because they love it. I would love to see that there will be a cap on what you could spend. Wouldn't that be great, Conan, if every county had the same finances at the start of the year, and at least that can't be used, you know, as a reason. Although, like, I mean, obviously it happens in other sports as well, that some teams are richer and maybe they deserve it. But I suppose maybe in an amateur sport, should it not be a level playing field?
Well, that's it. And like you're mentioning when teams here are richer, like, but there's enough natural advantages then that come with having a population or those commercial sponsors. And then once you're winning, like, that's a merry-go-round that you don't come off as easily. And it's harder for the other counties to get onto it then once the wheels are in motion. The only thing I would say about what Davey's saying, and I completely agree, it almost just doesn't go far enough. Like, you can cap the spending, but that's just one team. You know, when, like, imagine, like, the income, say, the Dublin are getting. Like, I know they're always the example, but obviously they're getting far more than everybody else. They might not be able to spend as much on their senior team, but then they've got underage teams, they've got coaches in the county, schools to infiltrate, they've got grounds and facilities to build. Like, you can still do a lot of work outside of that one team, and it will eventually feed into it. So I still think to take on what Davey's saying a bit further, you need to just cap what each county earns and make that fair across the board.
Would there be ways around it, Connor? Like, I mean, we can say you can cap it, and then your county board you know, puts through the books exactly what, you know, they're going to spend, and then some, you know, benefactor, you know, privately gives $100,000 or whatever to that. Like county managers' payments don't go through the books. Like, is it practical?
Yeah, well, I think there's always going to be ways around it, Willie. But like the point that Conan made there is valid, and it's something that we've discussed before in terms of like that it just simply isn't fair that like, you know, it's nothing against the bigger counties that they can command more money and more, you know, sponsorship revenue than smaller counties, whatever. But like, considering that the GAA is an amateur organization, you know, we've talked about it before that there needs to be some, you know, some sort of universal pool like that these funds that are generated through GAA teams can be then divvied out to give the other counties a fighting chance. And I think that this is going to become more relevant than ever next year, because we've already have, and like before we get into 2021, we've already had numerous county board chairmen that are talking about the viability of inter-county operations next year, because they've taken such a hit because of COVID. So like, whether, like you mentioned earlier on, the GAA probably won't consider it because, you know, it's common sense and they haven't done that in the past. But like, the reality is it's going to hit them with this, going to hit so many counties like a slap in the face next year. Yeah. And they're going to have to look at a more kind of socialist approach to divvying out the funds that the GAA and individual counties do generate.
Yeah, it might, this whole thing might kind of force change across the whole association. There's war going on in Kildare. Selbridge were beaten last weekend by Moorfield, and the apparently it was a very controversial match, and Selbridge are saying that the referee was not fair in any way. I got some stats from the Selbridge side. Now, I have to repeat that this is from the Selbridge side of things, from their, you know, their own stats team, is that 45 frees were given in the game and 32 of them were given to Moorfield. And Moorfield kicked 10 of 14 scorable frees and Selbridge kicked 3 of 4. You know, like, I mean, if they're fair stats, you can kind of see, like, there has to be something to this game, lads, because if we're being honest, while most people I've contacted are staying fairly quiet about it, you're looking at Kevin Flynn, Paddy Brophy and Fergal Conway actually taking the extreme. Now, I have to say this is extreme kind of option to potentially not commit to the county. Like, I mean, this must have been a pretty poor refereeing performance.
Like, it is. It's really, really extreme. But I suppose we've probably all been there, you know, where you've been completely screwed over in a game and a big game at that as well. And yeah, the anger that comes with that afterwards, and you're thinking, why would I bother? Like, I was never in your position, Willie, but I can understand why somebody would think, why would I bother representing the county if that's how you're treating me? But the only thing I would say is that, like, you know, poor Jack O'Connor has nothing to do with that. Like,
yeah.
You're not representing the, if you think it's a county board member screwing you over or a referee or whatever, you're not just representing them. You're representing more than that, and you're doing it for yourself. You know this better than me, but I'd say with a bit of time, it might calm down a bit.
It might calm down a bit. Like, I mean, the talk of Mick O'Grady is going back in, but like I said, those other three lads are thinking about what they should do. Like, here's the thing. Their beef is obviously the appointment of this referee. He apparently, there's some second kind of hand connections with Moorfield anyways. So obviously their issue is with the appointment of this referee. They're looking to punish the county board. Who are they ending up punishing? They're punishing themselves and they're punishing their teammates on the Kildare team and punishing Jack O'Connor. I don't see how this kind of necessarily solves anything. Connor?
Yeah. I just saw somebody on Twitter was saying, so I was looking up for what happened in the Selbridge game, but they were saying that if Moorfield win, Henry Barrett will drink for free in Neeson for the rest of his life. So that's another indication, I suppose, into maybe the one-sided nature that some people thought about it. But like, but this is the thing. Like, I get, as Colin said there, I get kind of that they're that pissed off that this is the level of protest that they're prepared to go to. But like, at the end game is that, you know, like it's Kildare that suffers, it's their teammates that suffer. And even I was seeing that their manager was saying that, like, he said he's never seen anything like it in his life in terms of refereeing performance, but he's also saying that he hopes that the players go back in. And he said himself, this is the Moorfield, or the Selbridge manager, sorry, he said that he doesn't think that the whole county should be held accountable for it, which is, like, I get what the lads are trying to do in terms of make their point, but this is what's going to happen. And in a few months' time, the Kildare supporters will be wondering, you know, they'll have forgotten about this game and they'll be thinking, we still don't have four of our best players. So, you know, it's just that in the end, you know, they might just have to take a few days to stew and then bite their tongue and get over it.
I'd say that's probably what will happen. This, I'm calling this next topic, Motivating, Brilliant, Successful, Incredible Players Part 2, because I think you'll remember us talking about Will O'Donoghue, or maybe it was with Brian Carroll. I can't fully remember, but he was captain of Na Piarsaigh when they won the county title, and he was saying everyone was mad to have a push at us, you know, and TG Cahir interview and Shane Dowling interview, they were questioning our hunger. So I hope everyone knows that we're alive and kicking or whatever. And I was thinking, Jesus, yeah, like these lads are very sensitive to being told, you know, that they don't have the hunger. And it seems like it's a big motivating factor. But anyways, TJ Reid after Ballyhale Shamrocks, I have to remember, double All-Ireland winners, three in a row Kilkenny titles, won pretty much ease. The last two were won at ease anyways. And TJ Reid said after they won it, there was a question mark over our hunger for the final. They were speaking about Dixborough and their athletic speed, their pace, their strength. So we were hearing that all week. James O'Connor, who's their manager, spoke about that all year. He was listening in from the outside. He was looking at O'Loughlin Gales and Dixborough. They were all talking about those two teams. So we knew that we had competition this year. And whenever there's competition or a challenge thrown at these boys, they'll go out there and give it 110%. Fair play to James O'Connor for convincing Ballyhale that Dixborough and O'Loughlin Gales are anywhere near as good as them. Like, I mean, Conan, that's unbelievably good management, because as far as I'm concerned, if I'm a Ballyhale Shamrocks player, I'm probably not going to buy into that too much.
It's such an incredible feat from O'Connor, because yeah. We've all been in the changing room where somebody said, you want to hear what they're saying about you down the road? Come on, it's bullshit. Like, they're not saying that at all. And he somehow got into their heads. And I find it, like, it's actually a great, I'm excited about this segment, the Motivating, Brilliant, Successful, Incredible Players segment, because remember the Michael Jordan documentary or The Last Dance?
And everyone they were
laughing at him, and it became sort of a joke, like, you know, how he personally made a lot of these rivalries. But I interviewed a sports psychologist and asked her about it. I was like, did he lean into that too much? And she said, no, because he's got like 80-odd games. He's done it all. So, like, you're seeing a documentary where he's doing it about four times a season. He needs something to get himself up for those games. And if he can latch on to something a player said, then that's going
to
help him.
Well, he used to make things up to motivate himself, really. Like, I mean, but this is the gas thing. Like, there's only so often you can do that, though. So, look, James O'Connor coming in as a new manager, questioned her hunger. Maybe that's not an angle that Henry Shefflin had taken, you know, before him. So he was lucky enough in that regard, because I've told this story before. It was like, you know, we're playing back in 2000, when I came back to Portage, 2011, and you're playing in a county semi-final, and the speech before it is, you know, these lads don't rate you. It was against Stradbally, and like, I'd worked out in Stradbally, and Stradbally might not fear Portage, but they know how good we were. Like, I mean, this was when Portage were Leinster contenders and, you know, All-Ireland contenders. And I said, these lads don't think you're any good, whatever. All right, grand for the semi-final, because Stradbally had beaten us. Then we go play Great Cullen in the final. And this big speech from one of the joint managers is about, lads, I was over in Great Cullen now there during the week. And I was working. He worked in the prison, or he worked as a guard, and was over in Great Cullen, and I was talking to a lad that I know. These lads don't think you're any good. And I was thinking, like, I mean, Jesus Christ, like, I mean, Great Cullen would be terrified of Portlaoise, if we're being honest. We don't have a huge rivalry of them. I've friends in Great Cullen who would actually come and support Portlaoise in Leinster because they think we're so good. And this lad's trying to convince us to say these lads. And I was just like, oh, Christ. I suppose... overplaying these kind of things, Connor, is too much. A new manager coming in, maybe coming at a hunger angle, isn't a bad thing, but holding it for the final was probably the right thing to do, if that's what he did.
Well, it worked, I suppose. So yeah, like any tactic that works is an effective one. But I find it amazing in these circumstances that nobody ever questions the reputation or the credibility of the people who are questioning the team itself. So as you said, your man over in Great Cullen, you know, he was talking to a fella on the street or something like that. But sure, you know, you could just make that up from anywhere. Like,
it, he did. Well, he did make it up, because there's no way anyone in Great Cullen would have said that.
That doesn't mean that the team that you're playing against, or the players, or the management involved are questioning you. And when TJ Reid said they were talking about them all year, or they were doing this, I was like, who are these they? Like, are they the same people that were on to you when you said you'd be disappointed not to see Ballyhale in a provincial championship there a couple of weeks ago? But like, I suppose you know obviously way more about this. Well, you haven't won so many county titles with Portlaoise, but when you win so much, I imagine you have to work harder to find sources of motivation. And that's if you're in desperate need of sources of motivation. Like some some players and some teams you have that are motivated enough, they don't need those outside sources. They don't need somebody telling them they're crap or that they don't rate you or anything like that. Like, you know, you can't be like Mayo, or you can't be even like my own club and using the carrot of finally getting over the line all the time. You have to, you know, you have to find somebody who's questioning you and stuff like that. But I even the TG Carr one with Shane Dowling and the Piercy is asking questions about somebody's hunger, not perfectly reasonable. As you said, like,
well, no, it is reasonable, but it fairly pisses them off. Like, I mean, if you were a manager, you would actually ring up Shane Dowling, here, do us a favour there and question our hunger. Like, I mean, you would ask one of your punditry friends, Conan, to say, to plant them on TV and say, it's a big issue with their hunger this year. Ballyhale, you know, TJ Reid especially now, actually, he's not hungry.
Yeah, not for the job, would be Joe Brawley, because he everybody on the street who's able to tell some sort of story, so he'd be perfect for it.
Yeah, maybe that's what Dublin need to do this year when under Desi needs to get one of the high profile Dublin punter, Kieran Whelan, to say after the first round, poor enough performance from Dublin, you'd have to say, I think hunger's going to be a huge issue for them this year. Bang, dressing room wall, hunger, you know how this pisses off the top players, Colin Cooper's frothing at them out, like, I mean, this Kieran Kilkenny is absolutely livid, he can't sleep for 3 days, and Dublin wins six in a row, Cutter.
But if it gets them talking about something else apart from the process, then I'm happy enough. You know, if Kieran Whelan has to take that sword for everyone else, well, then if that works for Dublin, well, then let him off.
It can be done. There's no doubt about that. St. Barnabans. You might have never heard about St. Barnabans. I hadn't, if I'm being honest. And I played out in New York for 2 summers. I don't know where they were at that stage. They probably came up through the ranks. But they've won their first senior county title over in New York. And I didn't really have time on Monday to talk about this. But they needed extra time in a replay to get it done. Again, replays. What is it about this COVID? Replays in a final all over again, or even in New York. They came from 10 points down, right? The most notable thing, like the biggest talking point from this is St. Barnabans have no outside players. Their team is made up completely of all American-born players. Now, this is unheard tell of any summer I went out. Now, to be fair, the year when every other club couldn't get players from Ireland out, you know, and St. Barnabans were in a much, much stronger position than they would be in any other year. There's no doubt about that. Was the New York County chairwoman, Joan Henshey, said after the game, and this has to come as alarm bells to any college student in Ireland that likes to get over to America, get their few grand, get their job, have their night out, you know, enjoy the American culture, even though they're all crazy over there now. I'm glad it's not now that I was looking to go over. She said that it just shows that we're quite capable of competing in New York without sanctions and transfers or importing players. Jesus, I don't know. This would be a huge blow. And one nice little perk, Conan, of being an intercounty player or even a decent club player that has connections is to get a nice, handy summer in America.
Yeah, I actually thought of you and Dermot Connolly. I thought, Jesus, there's a nice cash cow gone for the two boys every summer, like, you know. But it's a shame, but it's also good, because I think this is the reason why you're trying to spread GA over in America is to have American players starting to play. Like, you know, you don't want a whole all Irish games every year. And I know it's not that, but I think this is a good milestone to see an American team do it. People who've come up through underage. And, like, you know, that's it. Like, you're trying to build it so people will come, and it'll be bigger games. It'll not just be a little home from home for everybody who's out abroad.
Well, that's it. Shane Hogan said after the game, who's one of their county players, he said a lot of guys have been playing with Barnabas. What did I call them? Did I say St. Barnabas? Anyways, I get club names wrong all the time, so I'm sure this is just going to add to the list. So Barnabas, a lot of guys would have been playing with Barnabas since we were under sixes. And I don't know about you two, Connor, but when I think of playing in America, I think of their senior team and I think of importing players and I think of that. I never think of underage structures within the clubs out in America.
No, absolutely not. No, but it's amazing to see, we're coming on like off the back of the last few years where New York have had domestic players in their actual county squad that are playing against teams in the Connacht Championship as well. So it's brilliant to see. I just don't think, I know Joan Henshey said that, but I don't see to cast a reassuring note for the students and people that might fancy a summer in America when all the COVID stuff is over. I just don't, I can see that continuing for as long as, you know, as long as it will go on, because, you know, like it, things go in cycles and people will end up in the States. And when talented players become available, you know, the clubs that are in, and they're in New York as well, are going to want to snap them up. But if it doesn't happen, Wooly, you've had your fun and that's all that matters.
Well, that's all that matters. Their manager afterwards, Johnny McGeaney, said, I don't know if it's an ignorance or what they get from the Irish side, but then just never gave up. That was coming back from the 10 points down. And I would say, Johnny, you're right. It's the pure ignorance from the Irish side, I would imagine. The last story on this one is a great Derry man who's just got a 6-game ban in soccer. We can have to talk about soccer in this, for pissing on the pitch. Right. So I think this was a very interesting thing that we need to analyse, is pissing on the pitch and how you can do it indiscreetly and not have the whole stadium and the TV cameras pick you up like Owen Bradley did. So, like, I mean, he went down into a press-up position. Have you seen the picture of this, Conan? I presume you have. He almost went down to in a press-up position, lifted up his shorts and had the little fella, you know, blowing around in the breeze while he was going for a piss. This was picked up. He got a 6-game ban, which is a massive ban, really. When I have to say, I've seen loads of GAA players do it, going down on one knee, not taking the little man out, you know, just have it kind of hidden between the loose short, under the loose shorts, but maybe the little piddle coming down just on the inside of the leg that's kneeling down. So look, a tip for anyone who wants to piss on the pitch, that's how you do it. Not like Owen Bradley.
Well, like that's it, but it's like a groin stretch, isn't it, that you're talking about?
Yeah, you've got, yeah.
And like, I actually had a bit of sympathy for Owen Bradley because I thought he was, like, he wasn't doing everything right by the book, but he was doing it his own way. He was doing a press up. He wasn't just standing there pissing. At some point, there has to be accountability for the director, like, because I saw a clip of it and I was like, right, cut away from him. Showed you him pissing for a few seconds. It was mad.
Well, I don't think they were showing him necessarily. They were showing the team in the huddle. Now, what actually did him was the whole team sat down for the huddle. It reminded me of that manager. Do you remember him? They were getting hammered against Man City. Phil, what do you call him? Yeah, that lad, right. So they're all sitting down. So they didn't have much camouflage for poor Owen Bradley, who wanted to have his little sneaky piss. I remember before the minor All-Ireland in Croke Park in 96, I pissed in the huddle, standing up, just pissed down onto the ground. I had to go. It was too close to the foot, to the starting whistle in the game to run back into the restroom. The sensation to go for a piss was so strong that I just wouldn't have been able to concentrate. And I had no other option in this case. I waited until the huddle, until it was well covered, and nobody would have known any different, only my teammates, who weren't too happy about me doing it. But I just had to do that. Like, I mean, I don't know. Owen Bradley could have got a lot of more help off his teammates, Connor, is basically the point I'm making here.
I'm just surprised that we're analysing techniques of players pissing on the pitch. And actually, I think there was I'm pretty sure there was an incident. I'm not going to name the player of the team, but it was on TV, like an All-Ireland quarterfinal or semi-final stage in the last couple of years, where the camera inadvertently went to somebody who was doing the classic Wooly technique that you've described there, with the one knee down and the leg stretched out and kind of going at it there. But it's just unfortunate for Owen Bradley that this happened to him in the same week that Owen, what's your man's name from Spurs, Eric Dier, had to actually leave the pitch. I was about to ask what's the alternative. So when Owen Bradley is spotted doing that and Eric Dier does the thing and leaves to the bathroom, it doesn't look
Dyer's was a number two, no? I don't know any secrets to do that.
Well, Gary Lineker knows all about it.
yeah, Lineker. Yeah, exactly. Right, okay, lads, listen, we've got overtime there. We'll leave it there on the Owen Bradley pisser. And listen, I think it's a bit extreme. And you're right, the director could have cut away faster, even though it's not like he was trying to record Owen Bradley doing it. But listen, he needs to be a little bit more streetwise and do the groin stretch as far down as you can go and you won't be caught. Right, we'll leave it there and we'll be back. We'll look ahead to the matches at the weekend.
Is the little dink fist pass from a crowded area into that D we're talking about, where Bernard, I've talked to Bernard about, Bernard's very patient. But this little dink ball, you know, the one in a crowded area where it's a fist pass, the weight is taken over, hits the ground, and it bounces into a fella's chest, and there's consternation then in around the D and in around that area. Watch for this in the semis and the final. Do you know what I'm talking about? That little fisted ball that's just in a crowded area, but it gets to the body.
You have said it three times.
It's in around it. But you're looking at me. You're looking
out
at me.
Of a crowded area, isn't it?
You're looking at me with such a confused head in you. It's like I was talking about you trying to get a point in coppers or something there in a crowded area. Yeah, watch for it.
All right, so matches at the weekend, lads. We know Curragh Finn are out of the Galway Championship, so it's Mount Bellew, my Lock versus my Cullen in the final. So there's going to be a new winner for the first time since 2012. To help us look ahead to this one, Ray Silk joins us on the line now. First off, Ray, how's everyone in Curragh Finn? It's a very unusual feeling for you all.
Yeah, I was talking to one of my nephews there at Cahill and Leam earlier in the week, and you know, it's a strange development when you county champions for 7 years in a row and your last defeat is 2012, as you said. You know, one of the lads at work was just saying he has a 2012 car, and he was saying I bought that span new that year, so 8 years is a huge amount of time. But you know, Mobelio deservedly won, and I think Curragh Finn had been riding the look a little bit, Colin, for the last 2 years. It took a replay against Tuam last year. They were beaten the first day, but they managed to get out of the noose. And the previous year, it was 7-6 against Mount Bellew, and they scored an injury time. So Mount Bellew played as they always have, but just Curragh Finn didn't have the gas in the tank. Like, they looked like a car to me. You know those electric charge cars they have now, and it's that beeping. The battery was gone, and you know, Jason Leonard at midfield, from Michael Daly a handful. Dahi Buck is Tullock Moore's county captain as well. He's the captain for the county final next week. He had a fine game, but it was tough going. And Kieran Fitzgerald at 38, 39 years of age, his presence at fullback, not alone for his stability, but also his organisational skills. And my own nephew Liam was marking Owen Finnerty, who gave him bags of it. And Patrick Kelly is a big mammoth of a man, 6'5". And the full back line were not able for the aerial threat that Mount Bellew posed. So while Curragh Finn are disappointed, 6 of those guys are 30 or over. And Gary Sice is, I think, 36. So is it the end of that team? Yes, I'd say so. In many ways, it probably is. It's not that they're just 30, but they have so many miles in the clock, season after season after season. So, you know, it's going to take a few minors to come in there, underage things. And while everyone thinks Curragh Finn are this, you know, Rolls Royce of an underage coming through, the quality coming through is very hard to replace amazing players like Sice and Fitzgerald. Those guys, just I'll finish on Fitzgerald and Sice, but particularly Fitzgerald, 14 county medals. That's a once in a generation kind of a player. That he stayed injury free, that his wife let him play, that his career allowed him to play an All-Star in 2001 and an All-Ireland medal in 2019. It's Lake na Gael kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's freaky, all right. There's no doubt about it. So Owen Finnerty got 6 from playoff Liam Silk, which I couldn't, I was surprised. I was trying to ask people, and who was Finnerty marking? Because he was full forward and Silk was full back. And I suppose they left Liam on Finnerty, who kicked 3 from playoff him, or 6 from playoff him.
Yeah, they left Liam off him, you see. Fitzy was gone, so they're kind of looking for fullback. Kieran Malloy, the tradition in Curragh Finn, Cullen, is that they would go kind of horses for courses, and Liam Silk would have normally done very, very well on Owen Finnerty. But Owen Finnerty was getting good quality ball, and you know, he's a strong unit as well. Barry McHugh was doing well outside him, and there was no cover at all. So it was mano a mano, one on one, and Finnerty had the better of him that day. And Patrick Kelly, who's 6'5". Now, I marked Dermot early in an All-Ireland final, and I was very conscious of the fact that he had 2 or 3 inches on me. Now, when you're giving away 6 inches and high ball is coming in, you're in big trouble. So I think Kelly was asked into the Galway seniors earlier in the year.
Hang on now. Dermot Early has 3 inches on you if you're on your tippy toes.
I know. Jesus, we're having a nice conversation there. And me, a leash man, the same as yourself, and you pull across my shin. There was no shelter there at all, Parkinson. But I take your point. But I'm just saying, when you were in the full back line, and in that game, I think Mick O'Dwyer was trying to get Dermot to go inside, so high ball in. Kelly did awful damage as well, and Kieran Malloy got taken off, and deservedly so. So we had no, Curragh Finn had no answer to the aerial threat of Finnerty and Kelly. And they played Pawgeen, to be honest. Now, for Mike Cullen have Sean Kelly in there, who's a fine player, county fullback, really. And they have maybe Garrett Bradshaw. But I don't know if they got a second guy. So I expect Kelly to maybe be able for Finnerty. But who have they got for Kelly? And that's a big question. Now, you know, Kelly scored a few points as well. And he took his goal very, very well. But Curragh Finn were beaten in the fullback line and badly beaten.
Right. So, like, I mean, Mike Cullen, or like, I mean, first of all, how good are Mount Bellew, my Lock? Like we said, they've been close enough to Curragh Finn in other years, playing a very defensive style. Have they evolved with that? Has Val Daly's influence, you know, changed them into a more attacking style? I think you just kind of referenced that they didn't change all that much.
No. What I reference is that they've always, Corfin, they took Corfin to a replay 1 year. They took them to a replay 2 years ago. Michael Donlan, who's a former star with Corfin, not the Dunmore Michael Donlan, but Corfin, he brought them to a county final, county semi-final. Val has changed them in one aspect. They're pushing up much more. And it was I was lucky enough to get into the stand in Pure Stadium, and you could hear Val Daly shouting, push up, pressure, pressure, pressure. So when Bernard Power, the Corfin goalie, was getting it, all his backs were being pressurised. Now, once the last ball, once the ball got lost out the field, then they retreated. But they really put the full court press on Corfin. And just on an aside on Val Daly, people might know this, or the listeners, just how history and geography repeats itself. Val was captain of Montbellu when they last won the title in 1986. And here he is 34 years later, managing a side with his son at midfield, and his other son would be playing, John, who unfortunately is out with a crucial ligament injury. Yeah. And in 1986, Willie, you like this. In 1986, Val Daly said he wished everyone a happy Christmas because the county final was played on December the 13th.
Brilliant.
Because he had been away with the international rules series. He was down in Australia, so the whole thing was held up for a month. But that was Val back then, wishing people happy Christmas. Will they win on Sunday? It's a 50-50 game, and I'm not sitting on the fence. Montbellu beat Annadown very well in the first round. They beat Micheál Brannocks. And just a little bit of a backstory to the game. In the dead rubber of a match in the group stage, Montbellu got beaten by Mike Cullen by 4-14-1-9 down in Tube Stadium. Wow. Hammered them, 4-14-1-9. But I get the feeling very strongly that Montbellu practically threw that game. They just didn't care. Like, they were just walking around. They had no interest at all. So now, back in the final, you know, will that come back to haunt Mike Cullen? Or what will they have learned? Or how much will Montbellu have learned? Now, you said how good are Montbellu. They have three outstanding forwards. Finnerty, Kelly, and one of the best free taker in the county from the ground, Barry McHugh. So the three serious forwards there. Is that enough to get them over the line? They might need Michael Daly, who was phenomenal at midfield the last day. They might need a bit from him. If they had John Daly, who was the normal centre back and Michael's brother, if he was playing, I would go for Montbellu. But I don't know, are things going well for Mike Cullen? Can we talk a little bit about Mike Cullen?
Yeah, no, that's what I was wondering, where they've come from. They won the intermediate in 15. Peter Cook's in America, you know, would have been one of their best players. I'm surprised you're calling this 50-50.
I'll tell you why. Mike Cullen have three new signings this season that I'm aware of. They have three new players. One is an absolute gem of a player. He's from Antrim. Owen Gallagher is his name. And Don Kennellan, their manager, and Maurice Sheridan were a few Sigerson teams. Maybe that was a connection with NUIG. I don't know. But Gallagher, he's a bloody good player now. He's an inter-county forward to join a club. And he's experienced. He's not 19 or 18 or just out of the ranks. This boy, he was the game changer against Tuam Stars. He broke the tackle. He's got a stunning goal, set up points. That's number one. Number two, they have a guy, Tom Clark, who your listeners will enjoy this now, Cullum. He's from Knockmore. And he transferred to Mike Cullen this year, and the boy is from Knockmore, who won the Mayo Championship. So there's pressure on him to deliver. He's a good midfielder himself, from Mark Lydon, now good players.
And where did he did he just move to the town, or is he a college Maurice Sheridan connection as well?
No, he's a Garda Síochána connection, and Don is a guard as well. So look, I don't know how these things work. You'll have to get Shawnee Johnson or a few of these lads that have transferred back and over. Did you ever transfer anywhere? No,
I'm completely against it, Ray.
Yeah, well, anyway.
Well, I did. I went to Parnell's, so that's why I'm only joking.
Oh yeah, Parnell's back in. That's a long time ago now.
Yeah, it is. Well, 2009. Yeah.
Yeah, but I understand with location. So what I heard about Tom is, you know, you work nights in Galway and you finish up at 9 or 10 a.m. and then you have to go down and train, and after a night shift, and the guards are doing 12 and 13 hour shifts. So he's there. And then there's a Neil Walsh as well from Cavan, who's a good player at full forward. So 9, 11 and 14 are new signings to the club. Like.
Right. To a club that was making waves already anyways.
To a club that was working very, very hard, got beaten last year in the semi-final by Tuam, even though they were up a good few points. Now, maybe one or two of the lads were there last year, but the new signings from the point of view to the club in the last year or two, but I think Gallagher didn't play last year. Then you tied that in with some well-known names, Garrett Bradshaw, who has been a Galway stalwart for years and years, obviously, and then Aidan Caffey's been there a long time. The captain is only a young buck, Desi Keneally. He was minor a few years ago, and it's a good decision by Don to make a young fella captain, because he seems to have been able, well, he might be 22, 23, he's going on to be a national school teacher. He's able to kind of gel the older and the younger, and if it's live on, well, it's, you can stream it live anyway on galwayga.ie, but wait, keep an eye out for this guy. His name is James McLaughlin. He's 18 in December. Now he's 6'4". He was minor. He was midfield in the Galway minors, and he was midfield in the under-20s. He is an absolute monster of a man. They play him at wing forward, and they try and target a few kickouts from him. And there's very few club wing backs that are going to be able for a 6'4" man at wing forward. So myself and Daniel Cox, you might vaguely remember, the listeners might remember there, Galway got to an All-Ireland final against Cork, and it got beaten in extra time, and Daniel Cox scored a screamer to bring them back into the game in normal time, so he's able to come on then. So they have a bit of a bench. Paul Kelly is another supersonic basketball player as well, Sean's brother. Paul was considered, I think he was Irish youth basketball captain for a while. He's a super playmaker. So my Colonel come inside, have they got the experience that Montpellier have? No. Could they win on Sunday? Yes, I would say they absolutely could. But based on both games, and that's what you can look on, Montpellier seemed to have a wee bit more about them the last day. But my Cullen got three goals, and they set up two or three more goal chances. So if their forward line can click through Owen Gallagher, I don't think, you know, it's very hard to call when you have two teams that have never met before in a final. My Cullen's last final, are you ready for this? Because I said to my nephews, Cullen, we enjoy this kind of a family bit of an argument. I said to my nephews earlier in the year, it'd be good if someone else won. And they said, what are you talking about? And I said, the likes of my Cullen have never, because I live in my Cullen now, the likes of my Cullen have never won a senior championship. And you've got boys walking around with 10, 12 and 14 medals, like, to be fair, like, spread it out a bit. And, you know, but they didn't like hearing that. But I do believe that as you get older, you get a little bit more altruistic. And My Cullen's last final was 1977. My Cullen haven't been in a county final in 43 years.
And they've never won it.
They've never won it. And Corfin beat them in 77. No, they've never won it. And should those boys have played, Lord rest, a few of them have passed away onto the big stadium in the sky. Like, but those men are in their 70s now. I meet them, and they're going to go to the game because of that reason. But it's very concerning that only 100 people are going to be allowed in. I believe there's a frenzy in the club trying to get the 100 tickets, and the club secretary has gone to ground. But it's great to see the colour. Like I said, I live there. My boys play with them, and my girls play with my Cullen, and it's great to see the colour and the pageantry that has never been in the club as long as I'm there. And also, just to add another little side, they're in the intermediate hurling final in a few weeks' time as well. So it's the classic dual club. You know, they're no same, they're not like the naughty boys. Not St. Cawes, I can't think of them. What's a dual club?
Schnocknail.
Like, thank you, I couldn't think of it. They're not like the Schnocknail, but there is some talks of doing the double, the intermediate championship and the senior championship. But I need the football people out and looking past Sunday, but it has the makings of a cracker. Now, they're saying if it goes to level 3 down here, the game will have to be moved from Pier Stadium down to Tuam Stadium, because the city would be in a lockdown situation then. So we're hoping that announcement doesn't come tomorrow. But there's some talk of that happening on Friday, and that can make things very difficult for my Cullen. They're so used to now playing in Pier Stadium. But it has the makings of a humdinger of a game. To call the winner based... You know, maybe there's a little bit more scoring power with Mike Cullen, with Desi Keneally, Conor Bohan, and Gallagher, and McLaughlin. But I would be confident Mike Cullen wouldn't even be in the final if they hadn't got those few lads joining up through the Gardaí and through. Owen Gallagher is a doctor. So any club that gets a few signings like that, sure, it's manna from heaven.
I know, it definitely is. And one thing about this one, I would say it's very disappointing that this game isn't on TG Cahir. Maybe they decided before the Meath final, when Meath teams never make, they don't make any impact on the Leinster club or anything like that. Not that there is one this year. It's just disappointing considering how strong Galway is to see two teams without Corrifin being in it, not being on the television. Ray, thanks very much for taking the call. You set it up brilliantly for us.
A pleasure talking to you. Take care, and I'll keep my eye out on the Parnell score sheet.
Great stuff from Ray there. Right, so there's a big one in hurling this weekend as well. It's Blackrock versus Glen Rovers. It's the Cork County Final. And to help us to look ahead to this one, Wayne Sherlock joins us on the line now. How's it going, Wayne?
Hi, good calling you.
Yeah, all good, all good. So you're the last man to lift the cup for the Rockies 18 years ago. I presume when you lifted that cup, you didn't think it wouldn't be won again for 18 years.
Yeah, it's hard to believe, I suppose, when you're in the middle of it yourself, you're kind of thinking, like, these things happen because you won the good runners at that time. And I suppose, well, being captain, you're kind of like, I think, is the game, but, like, 18 years is actually hard to believe, you know? So it's definitely hard to believe.
Yeah. So like, I mean, this is a huge drought for Blackrock. Like, I mean, how anxious are you to stop this? Like, Blackrock have the most county titles of any club in Cork.
Yeah. I suppose what makes it worse is that we have to win 4 under-21s and 3 minors in the meantime, you know. So it is county championship. So it's kind of long time coming. Like, but it just goes to show there's nothing guaranteed, you know. I think we kind of never. We struggled with relegation finals back in 2007, so we kind of, you know, we could have been close enough to being relegated as well, in one sense, which would have been hard, you know, to get relegated that time. So, I suppose the main thing for us with the underage got up and going, and we never stopped trying to get players through, you know what I mean? So, look, we're there on Sunday, we lost the final 2017, so there's nothing guaranteed, but, like, I suppose for Blackrock, it is vital that we do get one on the board, and I think if we do win one, you never know what might happen, you know, and we get the ball rolling a bit, but it is vital.
Yeah, you mentioned all that underage success. Like, I mean, it's 2009 the minors kicked off. You said you won 4 or 5 of them and 3 or 4 under-21s from 12 right up through 15. And, you know, we're 2020 now and it hasn't translated into the senior yet.
Yeah, it is, yeah. Look, it just goes to show. I suppose sometimes people can get obsessed with winning underage things, you know, whether it be 14, 16, whatever. I suppose the most important thing for me is to get players through, really. Okay, we see a championship, whether it be football or hurling, you know. So I suppose people looking around Cork would think we've underachieved this. We probably have, but it has been some lack of time, you know? So we definitely haven't kind of expected senior championships with all the success we had underage. It was just something that just hasn't happened.
And
hopefully on Sunday it'll change, you know. There's no guarantee because all the players on the pitch on Sunday have amount of the medals, underage medals in their pocket, like Bryce said. They'd actually told all of them away, you know, if they were giving us a senior medal on Sunday, you know?
Yeah, it's a funny one with Blackrock because I was looking through the team. It must be a young team, or like I'm not a hurling man, but none of the names jump out at me. Usually, you see with club teams, I'd know, you know, 3 or 4 of them, or you know, I've heard of them. I don't know. It seems to be like a really like a good club team without any stars. Would that be a logical conclusion I'm drawing?
I suppose it's probably a fair assessment, but we haven't had fellas who went on to play into county, you know, and like with Mike Hallen, who's been on the panel, he's captain on Sunday, he's been on the panel,
I think are good enough, but had they stepped up when needed at times, they probably haven't fulfilled their potential, and if they do, if one or two of them have a great game on Sunday, you know, you never know that Kingston and Cunningham might be looking at them, you know what I mean? So I suppose we kind of haven't progress that far in championships in hurling to see these fellas in action, you know, in the big games. So I do definitely think we have potential in fellas like Tyke Deasy, who can push on. Steve Murphy was on the panel, Cork panel for a couple of years. You know, Daniel Meaney is, you know, another fella who's been there and thereabouts. But I suppose we have no big names, which sometimes can be a good thing because there's no distraction, you know. So
yeah,
but we have a very solid panel, of players, which is something that definitely had Sunday. We probably have 4 or 5 subs that we never had before. So we definitely have a plan of 20, which is a massive, massive thing for a club, you know.
Right. You nearly made the breakthrough in 17. You're beaten by Im O'Kelly. We know how good they are. You were in as a selector that year. You're not in there. You're not in with them now.
No. I suppose I was there for the last 4 or 5 years involved. And I suppose, you know, myself, Colin, like I said, I was sick of listening to the same voice. And, you know, it's time to step away. So I kind of stepped away last year. Kind of helped out last year a bit at the end of the year, and kind of helped out match days as well now, so I'm kind of helped out and up in the stand a bit. I suppose if they're in, I'm a part of the backroom staff. If they lose, I won't be, so that's the way you look at it.
Well, like, I mean, obviously your ex-teammate Fergal Ryan is the manager, so you'd be good pals with him.
Oh yeah, look, Fergal has been involved in the club. I suppose he's a fella, for me when I was playing, I looked up to him, and even to this day he's a fella that's what a Blackrock man, you know. You've John Brown as well, Joe Young involved, your fellas like Kevin Murphy, Dunico Flynn, these fellas have given savage time to the club, and they've been involved in minor teams and 21 teams as well. So for them to win on Sunday, I tell you, they've left no stone unturned, and if any group of mentors deserve it, they do on Sunday, because they'll give massive massive commitment to the club.
Come here, how big is the rivalry with Glen Rovers? You'd be bigger rivals with Finbarrs, would that be fair to say?
Yeah, I suppose, see, when you hear of rivals, you know, these players are, they're very young, so like they wouldn't kind of have the old traditional rivalry that like older members in the club would remember, you know, so like,
yeah.
It's been 78 since Blackhawk and the Gaelic played. Like, these players probably have different rivals. Like, I suppose locally, it would be the Bears. They're only up the road from us. But you talk about tradition and all that. These players are very young. They probably wouldn't, you know, their parents would probably talk about it. And, you know what I mean? Yeah. But it's different times. You know? Like, every young fella knows fellas in different parishes, and they're probably going to the same schools and stuff. So it's different times when it comes to rivalries, you know?
Yeah, well, like, I mean, you mentioned that 1978 was the last final between the Rockies and Glen. And, like, I mean, since the year 2000, the power has shifted from the city clubs out into the countryside.
Yeah, yeah, that's a big thing, yeah. Yeah, I suppose that's one thing, you know, you can see, like, Blackhawk was an old area at one stage and the Bears now starting to come. I suppose all the older generation are kind of passing on. Their kids are probably coming long taking their houses open and stuff, so you probably see a shift that way, you know, because where houses are going, people are coming back in to take over their parents' houses and stuff. So, but that's one thing with Cork, you could have, like, even the Cork panel, there's fellas on junior teams that are good as fellas who are playing senior. You know, years ago, it would just take senior players, really, but now Cork have a pick from so many different clubs that it does give everyone a chance, whether you're a junior team or a senior, you know, so... So you always have a chance, you know, if you're competing with, like, a McKinley or a college or someone, it definitely puts you in the window.
Yeah, that's true. Do you think Blackrock came back from 3 points down in the final 10 minutes of the UCC match. Do you think that's, like, this team having turned a corner?
Yeah, I heard a lot of people talk about that, but actually, believe it or not, this team in 2017... we actually beat Bandon. We came back from a game that we shouldn't have won. Against Pershing in 2017, in the semi-final, we came back from 3 points down to beat Pershing. So the team have shown some bit of guts, you know what I mean? It isn't the first time that they have come back. So, like, people talk about that it's the first time they have shown some bit of resilience that came back. They haven't. They've been kind of doing this. It's probably not a big game like that, because the UCC were on top the whole game, really. But it's kind of a good team, but they've done it in the past, you know. But, you know, that haven't done the last couple of years. Like, as a panel of players, we've probably underachieved, you know. But I suppose if they win on Sunday, all that'll be forgotten about.
How do you plan for Patrick Horgan? Like, will you be asked secretly to bring your gear, maybe? And
I always have the gear ready, Colin. I always have the gear. I have to start pulling the jersey off him or something like that, so I try to catch up to him. But
how do you deal with him at club level, though?
Look, if I suppose from the word go, you need a fellow who's going to be, I suppose, sacrifice his own game, because if you take your eye off Patrick Horgan for 1 minute, he'll do first damage, you know. And you know, if he gets his tail up at the start, he'll do wreck for the whole game. So for me, whoever they're going to put on him, they need a fellow who's going to be selfish and just stay with him for the whole game, you know, selfless, and stay with him for the whole game, because it's all about the ball coming back out. Hoggy mightn't go falling the ball to the first hour line, but it's all about the lads recycling the ball back out to him, you know, and he gets space. And if he gets space at all, he's just, even to watch him, is just, sometimes he gets scores. I suppose you wouldn't see much in club games, though, but in club games, he's just like, he's unmarkable. So you need a fella who's just selfless and going to follow him the whole day, and just not worry about anything else, but just keeping Patrick Horgan quiet, you know?
Yeah. I was reading that in 1978, when you played them, there was 25,000 at the game. I nearly fell off my chair when I read that. Incredible. There's only going to be 100 this weekend, and that's if you're lucky, Wayne, because you'll probably find out tomorrow night what the story is.
Yeah, that's it. I think we fell out tonight, Colum, yeah. Yeah, the 25,000, I think back then there was 30,000 going to county finals, which was, it's hard to believe, you know. It would have been, it just... In this game on Sunday, I suppose it would have been interesting to see how many would have been there, because it's kind of old school, traditional clubs, you know, but two city teams. But I'm telling you, I was at the UCC game. When that whistleblower was at that UCC game, you swear there were 20,000 there, you know, the relief after the game and, you know, the players celebrating and stuff. It was just, so I'd say on Sunday, I don't know the players are going to be thinking about it and they'd want everyone to be there because I think the parents can't even go because it's only 100 tickets between both panels, so it's probably tricky. Oh, they're going to do it? Yeah, I don't know. Do the players get two tickets? So that's 24 players. That's 48. So, like, that's nobody's going in. So it's a funny one.
Yeah, I think that's probably the fairest thing to do, though, for family to come first rather than, you know, some of the other sports. Come here, what are you going to do about the jerseys? The jerseys are very similar, are they?
Yeah, Blackrock won the toss on that column. They won the toss on Monday. So Blackrock are wearing traditional Blackrock jerseys and the game will change.
Very good. And what will Glenn change into?
They have a kind of black. They have a black jersey. It's kind of black with green on the sleeves. Yeah, yeah. So, I thought four of them were going to change, actually. But we won the toss on Monday. So that's 1-0 to us. So hopefully we can... that might be a good thing.
You've won the phony war at the start anyways. Come here, Wayne, thanks very much for taking the call. I'm looking forward to this one. It's on TV.
It is, yeah, it should be a good one, hopefully. Yeah, good close game. And as I said, I can't wait and hopefully back up at the end because the work put in, the lads deserve it. They're a great bunch of young fellas and hopefully we can do it.
Thanks very much, Wayne, I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, Colin. Yeah, mind yourself, thanks. Bye bye.
Yeah, great stuff from Wayne and Ray there. I was talking to them earlier on Skype. The other big hurling one is the Galway final, St. Thomas's versus Turlough Moore. That's at 2:00. We know Thomas's are going for 3 in a row. They've never done that before. They've been a dominant team in Galway. They've won 3 of the last 4 titles without really making an impact on the All-Ireland club. Turlough Moore, we know Dottie Burke is at full forward now, so that's an interesting one to keep your eye out for. In the football side of things, a county final in Meath. This is on television on TG Cahir. This is at 2:15. Then the Cork hurling final is the later one on TG Cahir. Rathaut are looking to win it for 2 years in a row. They're also in the county hurling final. We play Trim next week. So for Gael Colum Kill, that's who they're playing. They haven't won it. They're a Kells team. They haven't won it for 29 years. They came back up to senior in 2014. A little bit like Mike Cullen. It's a repeat of last year's semi-final, which Rathaut won by about 7 points, even though they were down at half-time. In Offaly, Road play Tullamore. Big game here against between two of the big clubs. I think they're first and second on the roll of honour. Road have won 2 more. Tullamore beat them the last time they played in the final, 2013. Tullamore beat them. So there's definitely a rivalry there. It's another good final. Keep your eye out for Road. Have been a really big team in Leinster for the last maybe 20 years. They might be a little bit on the slide now. Interesting, Malachy McNulty, an ex-teammate of mine from Portlaoise, ex-Portlaoise manager, he's their manager. So even though Road would have been rivals of mine, I'll be shouting for Road, a little bit grudgingly shouting for Road. It's not my usual form to be shouting for Road, but I will this weekend. So that means they're going to lose, lads. Isn't that how it works? Italian Moorfield and Kildare. This is a repeat of the 2018 final. Atai just can't beat Moorfield. Well, who can beat Moorfield? Selbridge can't. You can't beat the referee and Moorfield, lads. We know that. That's the Selbridge lads. So Atai, obviously, Atai won it in 2011. They've been back to 2 or 3 finals since and haven't been able to win it. Moorfield, the completely dominant club in Kildare, and will be rightly favourites. Atai need to get over the psychological barrier, I think, with Moorfield to potentially be able to win that. Then the other big one, lads, is the replay of the Cavan County final. This is being streamed live. I think the Cavan County Board, Conan, have played a blinder here. They put the first one on RTE, showed the whole country what a lovely final we have and how we've changed and have the whole country. Jeez, that was a seesaw battle. I must watch that. €15 for the privilege of watching this on the stream. I know. I'm not technically being correct. There's 2 matches for 15. If you want to watch this match, the junior match before it, £15 for the 2 of them. It's a tenner just for this match on their own. A blinder they've played.
I did think Kingscourt gave away that equaliser a bit easy as well the last week. Are they all in on this? Just to give Calvin a second day out?
Yeah, that's fantastic. Like, I mean, at the same time, I was reading a quote from their manager, David Lennon, King's Court. And like, he was fairly honest about this. You don't often hear managers coming out kind of this strong, Conan. He says, "I'd like to think we have the advantage." Immediately I'm interested now that he's coming out with honesty like that. "We felt we didn't play in the first half at all. Cross or Lock were very good going forward in the first half. They got too much space for our liking, and the players admitted at halftime they weren't up to the standard and the speed of the game." And Cross or Lock were favourites going into the game. So it's interesting, the underdog coming out going, "We have the advantage going into the final. We didn't play for the first 15 minutes. We won't make that mistake again."
It's really ballsy, because when I watched that game, I thought, Jesus, the Kings Court did well to get back into it. Like, I thought they were being dominated for the first 35, 40 minutes, and I thought Cross or Lock just looked the better team, and the favourites tag was well worthy of them. So when Kings Court, I felt really bad on them for giving up that point, because I thought, like, Jesus, that was their chance, and they might have missed it. But now here's the manager coming out and saying, you know, we're going to do it again. And like, maybe he's thinking about, like, Adrian Smith ran amok inside. Like, he was just sharp as a tack. And, like, that's something that they'll obviously close down next week, or, sorry, Sunday, King's Court. So maybe he's just thinking we've learned a few things that we can tighten up on.
Yeah, I love that kind of bullish talk, Connor. Like, I mean, I don't that kind of talk gives me confidence. When you're confident, I think that rubs off on people, even though it is in the public and you say, oh, that'll rile the other team. It also has effect on your players. You know, we have the advantage going into this. Like, when you try to play these mind games, like in the media, and say, oh, geez, you know, we're just glad that we're still in it. And I don't care even if you're only saying that. You know, I still don't think it's the right thing to be putting out there.
Yeah, we've talked about this before as well, about like the perceived dangers in the GAA of talking yourself up and kind of what you're letting yourself in for. But just going back to a conversation we had a while ago, like, would you prefer your manager saying, oh, those lads in Cross or Lot, they don't rate us at all? Or your manager telling you, well, listen, lads, we didn't do enough the next day. We're way better than that. Do you know, so we're going to go out and win it the next day. Never mind about Cross or Lot. I know I prefer that motivational tactic. So just really refreshing to hear that from David Lennon.
Yeah.
Just, well, like, going on what Conan said there, I kind of had the up. Like, I thought that, I know they had to come from behind, but I actually thought the Kings Court looked the more likely winners on the first day out on Saturday night, maybe based on their second half performance. So they might feel that they kind of let that slip a bit. And the only thing that I read into what David Lennon's saying there is what Conan pointed out, that like, they can't allow the space in front of the Cross or Lot full forward line that they did the first half the last day. And I thought that the Cross or Lot midfield were very dominant as well for a lot of the game too. So Pádraig Faulkner kind of coming back, I helped that out. So you might look at it, you know, they might look to start the game with the kind of the formation and the setup that they had finishing the game the last day. But I'm not going to make any stereotypical cabin jokes about them charging a tenner for the cream anyway. They've, as you said, they played a blinder.
I've held off on that myself. I hope I have. I think I have. I've been telling. There's a list of cabin jokes we could have made there. Like, but just to finish up on this point. You're a King's Court player. Now, we know, like, when a manager says something in public, Conan, he'll say the opposite to his team. Like, I'd be sitting in the dressing room there going, just say that to the world. We don't need this game. Tell them what we are, you know what I mean? Like, these are such old school games. Like, that David Lennon, he's saying, I'd like to think we have the advantage. Tell everybody that. That's what we have. I want the whole county to know this.
Tell them, yeah, and it rubs off. As you, even if you're sitting in the changing room and that rubs off, it'll rub off more when you're telling everybody else and you're sticking your chest out and, like, you know, who cares? Like, you're going to, like, you lose enough games anyway. You lose enough games the other way. So, like, that doesn't always work. So it doesn't matter if you lose a game this way. Like, nobody will remember it in a game time. It's fine. Like, just lose it this way if you want to. But, like, this could have the effect where you go out and win because everybody else is sticking their chest out and go for it. Like, play front foot football and believe in yourself. Let's do it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. I couldn't agree more. Right, listen, lads, we'll leave it there. I'm sure we've definitely gone over time there. We'll be back on Monday, as usual, and review the second last weekend. Have we many county finals other than the Derry Championships that, oh, of course, they give their club all the exact time. Yeah, they give them the 10 weeks to the exact second. I think we mightn't have too many more county finals. So we should enjoy this. We should enjoy this Monday. What is that, Colin?
Thank you very much. The Derry finals are this weekend as well, actually.
Are this weekend?
Yeah, I was just waiting for you. I thought you were saving the best for last.
Oh, shit, they moved it back. Right, come on, let's go. So, Maharafelt versus Slotnail. Let's go. Give us your thoughts. Maharafelt are favourites, actually, going into this one. I got that arseways. I thought they were... Oh, yeah, they moved it back that 1 week because they got the extra week in the summer. Wasn't that it?
Yeah. Show a bit of respect. Put some respect on Derry's name.
The show went over it all, baby.
lock yourself in for another 5 minutes. This is a huge one. Patsy Bradley's back. Paul McNeil's playing cornerback for Slotnail. You would have like recognized him playing wingback for those title or those Ulster final and All Ireland final runs. He's just a class player, and there's just exposing teams. You're dropping men back. He's just scoring goals and setting up goals. Maharafelt, they're obviously defensive enough, but a very good like transition team, and they really know what they're doing now. The fact that they've gotten the two finals in a row now just shows that they're at the level. I thought, like, you know, they did really well last year to win it, but they've obviously just stepped on another gear, beat a good loop side in the semi-final. But Slotnail, having overcome Glenn and give them a good C&T and give, not really, to give Ballanderry a better C&T, to give them 16 points C&T in the semi-final. So Slotnail will be licking their lips, and they haven't won it since 2017.
They haven't been in the last two finals, which is a bit of a kick in the arse for Slotnail. Are they on? That would make someone from the outside say they're on the slide. Is that a fair thing to conclusion to draw?
Oh, never write off Slotnail, will he? I would actually say this puts him into the category of really good, successful players who are now hungry and being motivated again. And then just an intermediate final. I should shout out that my Derry club, Steelstown, my home club, are in the final. They've never won a championship at senior level, so we've lost two intermediate finals before, and here we are back in the big time against Greenlough.
Right, okay. And how will you feel if that cup is lifted and you're
I would be bloody delighted. I was sort of joking to Connor. I was like, well, half of these boys are my ex-teammates and half of them I've coached them along the way. So this is really my doing, to be honest.
Well, there you go. You've got something for your ego, because it's all about ego, right?
Yeah, but I did promise some of the boys if they don't win, I'll be one of the boys on the sideline just giving out about the team selection.
Like, it's amazing. I've heard comments made before about, say, a lad could come into the pub that night after losing a final and you'd hear, that bollocks is never in when we win. He only comes in when we lose. Do you ever hear that? Do you ever hear that go, that kind of carry go? I wouldn't even notice something like that, but there'd be lads that notice that lad never goes out for a pint if we win.
There was a boy who got, for no reason, he got the blame. There was a keeper for us, he still is a keeper, Marty Dunn, used to play for Derry, won an All-Ireland minor with him, but at an under-21 match, one of the boys said, now we all said it to Marty because we all like him, one of the boys said in a huddle, Marty's only down here to see us lose. Like, what? Like, Marty loves the club, so this sort of profile builds up around people for no reason.
Yeah, it's absolutely lousy. I saw the Maharafelt manager, Connor, during the week, and he was talking about playing Kilcoo last year. I think they lost by 4 points in the end, and realising the level they had to get to. And they worked really, really hard under strength and conditioning over the winter. And, you know, maybe just realising, okay, we won Derry, but that's the level that we have to get to. And Maharafelt are in that kind of, you know, phase of their progression where they're looking to improve every year.
Yeah, and then they're playing a team in Slotnail. You might have said that whether Conan speculates that they're on the slide or not, but this is a team that's been competing at the business end of the All-Ireland Championship for years now as well. So in terms of Derry...
To be fair now, this is very, very important. Conan's two died in the wool in Derry. Conan didn't say that. I said that, and Conan...
I was just going to jump in.
We just cannot, as a Derry man, attribute that comment to Conan.
Really, I'm just looking for any excuse for Conan to get beat in the 20-final this weekend. You know, like, he had the gall to say to me to suggest that, like, he's hoping that, like, his ex-players will mention him in the speech if Steelstown get into the end.
Yeah. Well, to be honest, Conan, I don't think Steelstown have the hunger, to be honest, to be able to do with this.
Brilliant.
Listen, I'm always looking out for you, buddy. That's the way it works, right? I'm definitely keeping my eye out for that result on Monday morning. Right, can we finish the show now? I've definitely missed out something else if I thought the Derry final was next weekend. Right, we'll leave it there, and we'll definitely talk to someone from the Derry County final on Monday. Right, okay, talk to you lads, thanks very much.
And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop, and when I got the chance to go, I said I should go, and so it opened up.
We're only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through. but it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know, and it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because like I'm heartbroken.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.